Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, we take a look at how Somalia is working to rebuild its economy. But first, a recent study questions whether placing attention on economic growth is the best way to improve child nutrition in low- and middle-income countries. Mario Ritter has more.
Subbu Subramanian is a professor at the Harvard School of Public Health in Massachusetts. He says there is a common belief on the best way to improve child health in developing countries. He puts it this way.
Let's just go after economic growth and then everything else will just follow.
But, he says, that is not always true. Take India, for example. A common measure of a country's economic health is gross domestic product, or GDP. India's GDP has been growing by more than 5% a year. That is a higher growth rate than most Western countries. Yet more than two-fifths of India's children are underweight. And Subbu Subramanian says the percentage of underweight children has changed little since the early 1990s. He and other researchers asked a question. Was economic growth failing to reach children in countries other than India? They looked at health surveys carried out since 1990 in 36 low- and middle-income countries, mostly south of Africa's Sahara Desert. The researchers compared the effect of GDP growth and signs of child malnutrition, like stunted growth and being underweight. But the researchers found only a small relationship, or correlation.
Practically zero to very, very small.
The group reported their findings in the journal Lancet Global Health. Subbu Subramanian says money should be spent on clean water and waste treatment systems, childhood immunization campaigns, and other programs.
Without these direct investments, what we are seeing is economic growth by itself is not making much impact.
But that is not how Lawrence Haddad sees the issue. He is head of the Institute of Development Studies in Britain. Lawrence Haddad says malnutrition has dropped sharply over the past 20 years in countries like Vietnam, Ghana, or Brazil. He says economic growth was responsible for half of those declines.
And the other half is attributable to strategic investments in water, sanitation, health systems, nutrition programs.
He says it takes both GDP growth and the right investments to improve child nutrition. I'm Mario Ritter.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English.
Thank you.
For years, Somalia has been called a failed state. Piracy, poverty, and terrorism have been problems in the country for a long time. But recent improvements suggest that the country is taking steps toward lasting security. Here again is Mario Ritter.
Somali officials say a stronger economy is extremely important to peace. Last week, Somali officials traveled to the United Arab Emirates, hoping to attract foreign investment. The event, called the Somalia Investment Summit, was held in Dubai. The goal was to present Somalia as a good place to invest. Somalia is dealing with the effects of a 20-year civil war. Foreign intervention is the main cause of increased security in the country. Over the past year, African Union troops helped drive al-Shabaab militants from major cities, and international naval forces have sharply decreased pirate attacks. But Ali Mohammed Gedi warns that the results of these efforts could be temporary. Mr. Gedi is the former prime minister of Somalia's transitional federal government. He says poverty must be ended. He says poverty is the reason young people join al-Shabaab.
If we create jobs for them, I believe that they play a role in the stabilization and the security of the country.
The chairman of the Somali Economic Forum, Hassan Dude, agrees. He says the pull of illegal activity, such as piracy, is strong when there are no jobs available. He says attracting investment to Somalia now, while security is improving, is very important.
I think what the international organizations and international community is starting to realize is that bringing troops to Somalia will not be the answer to this problem. When people have jobs and you know, better life, of course, they will be less likely to get in trouble.
Although conditions in Somalia are improving, safety threats remain. Somalia lacks a central government. Corruption is common, and the workforce is largely unskilled. These problems concern possible investors. Also, there are no secure legal safeguards for foreign investors. Hirsi Darir is chief executive officer of the Dahabshil Bank, which operates in 130 businesses in the country.
Investors are a bit afraid of actually going into situations like that, but there's a huge opportunity.
Somali officials are preparing legislation to create investment safeguards, and increased security has led to a growing number of foreign investors. Currently, the United Arab Emirates, Oman, and Yemen are the top investors in Somalia. I'm Mario Ritter.
And that's our program for today. We hope you continue to invest your time in As It Is and other programs from VOA Learning English. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Now, the VOA Special English Program, Words and Their Stories. A person's nose is important for breathing and smelling. The nose is also used in many popular expressions. Some people are able to lead other people by the nose. For example, if a wife leads her husband by the nose, she makes him do whatever she wants him to. Some people are said to be hard-nosed. They will not change their opinions or positions on anything. If someone is hard-nosed, chances are he will never pay through the nose or pay too much money for an object or service. It is always helpful when people keep their nose out of other people's business. They do not interfere. The opposite of this is someone who noses around all the time. This kind of person is interested in other people's private matters. He is considered nosy. Someone who keeps his nose to the grindstone works very hard. This can help a worker keep his nose clean or stay out of trouble. One unusual expression is, "That is no skin off my nose." This means that a situation does not affect or concern me. We also say that sometimes a person cuts off his nose to spite his face. That is, he makes a situation worse for himself by doing something foolish because he is angry. More problems can develop if a person looks down his nose at someone or something. The person acts like something is unimportant or worthless. This person might also turn up his nose at something he considers not good enough. This person thinks he is better than everyone else. He has his nose in the air. In school, some students thumb their nose at their teacher. They refuse to obey orders or do any work. Maybe these students do not know the correct answers. My mother always told me, if you study hard, the answers should be right under your nose, or easily seen. I think we have explained the nose expressions. What about ears? Well, I hope you are all ears, or very interested in hearing more expressions. We might even put a bug in your ear, or give you an idea about something. We also advise you to keep your ear to the ground. This means to be interested in what is happening around you and what people are thinking. If you are a good person, you will lend an ear to your friends. You will listen to them when they have a problem they need to talk about. Our last expression is to play it by ear. This has two meanings. One is to play a song on a musical instrument by remembering the tune and not by reading the music. Play it by ear also means to decide what to do at the last minute instead of making detailed plans. This VOA Special English Program, Words and Their Stories, was written by Jill Moss. I'm Faith Lapidus.
I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Faith Lapidus with People in America in VOA Special English. Today, we tell about Diane Fossey. She studied the wild mountain gorillas of Central Africa. Her work resulted in efforts to save these rare and endangered animals.
Diane Fossey was born in 1932 in San Francisco, California. Her parents ended their marriage when she was young. She stayed with her mother, who married another man a short time later. Diane said she had a difficult relationship with both her mother and stepfather. Diane was interested in animals all her life. She started making plans to be a veterinarian, a doctor who treats animals. After high school, she attended San Jose State College in California. There, she was successful in some subjects, but not others. She changed her program of study to occupational therapy. Occupational therapists help injured and sick people learn to do their day-to-day activities independently. She completed her studies at San Jose State in 1954.
Diane Fossey left California and moved to the state of Kentucky. She accepted a position at the Kosher Crippled Children's Hospital in the city of Louisville. People there said she had a special gift of communicating with children with special needs. Yet she also had a desire to see more of the world. Through friends, she became interested in Africa. She read a book about the wild mountain gorillas of Central Africa, written by American zoologist George Schaller. The mountain gorilla is the largest of the world's apes.
Fossey borrowed money and made a 6-week trip to Africa in 1963. She visited a camp operated by the famous research scientists Louis and Mary Leakey. The Leakeys were best known for their studies of the development of human ancestors. Fossey met with Louis Leakey and discussed the importance of scientific research on the great apes. She decided to study mountain gorillas, which were in danger of disappearing. Later on her trip, she traveled to the mountains of Rwanda. This is where she first saw mountain gorillas.
Fossey returned to the United States with a desire to work in Africa. She met with Professor Leakey a second time when he visited the United States to give a series of talks. This time, he asked her to begin a long-term study of the gorillas. He said information she collected might help to show how human ancestors developed. A group called the Wilkie Foundation agreed to support her research. The Wilkie Foundation already supported another researcher, Jane Goodall, in her study of wild chimpanzees. Fossey also received help from a major scientific and educational organization, the National Geographic Society.
Fossey returned to Central Africa in 1966. She spent a short time observing Jane Goodall. Then she began setting up her own research camp in what was then the country of Zaire. Fossey sought help from the local native people who knew how to follow mountain gorillas in the wild. A short time later, political unrest forced her to move to nearby Rwanda. She settled in a protected area between two mountains, Karisimbi and Visoke. There she established the Karisoke Research Center. This would be her home for most of the next 18 years. Much of that time, she worked alone.
Diane Fossey spent thousands of hours observing mountain gorillas. She worked hard to gain acceptance among the animals. To do this, she copied their actions and sounds. She studied the gorillas daily and developed an understanding of each individual. Many people had believed that mountain gorillas are fierce. Fossey found just the opposite. She learned that gorillas are both gentle and intelligent. They use their strength mainly when defending other members of their family or group.
In 1970, the National Geographic Society wanted to publish a story about Fossey and her research. It sent a photographer named Bob Campbell to Karasoke to take pictures. He took a picture of an adult male gorilla named Peanuts touching Fossey's hand. This became the first friendly gorilla-to-human action ever recorded. The picture appeared on the front cover of National Geographic magazine. It helped to make Fossey and her work famous. The American researcher was able to sit among the gorillas and play with them and their young. She made notes of everything she saw. She took a count, or census, of the gorilla population. She noted what the animals ate and their environment. Fossey learned a lot about the gorillas, but it became difficult for her to remain an independent observer. She believed that the animals would disappear forever unless something was done to protect them and the environment.
Diane Fossey needed money to continue her research project. She believed that she could get more financial assistance for her work by getting an advanced degree. She left Africa in 1970 and attended the University of Cambridge in England. She received a doctorate in zoology a few years later. Fossey returned to Rwanda to find that hunters were killing some of what she called her gorillas. The hunters earned money by selling the heads, hands, and feet of the animals. Among the gorillas killed was one called Digit. Fossey had observed Digit for many years and treated him almost like a friend. His remains were placed with those of other dead gorillas in a special burial area near her camp.
After Digit was killed, Fossey established a program to increase international support for efforts to protect mountain gorillas. It was called the Digit Fund. Fossey also began an active campaign to stop the killing of the gorillas. She opposed efforts by Rwandan officials to increase the number of visitors to the animal's native environment. She formed a small force to help guard mountain gorillas against humans. She destroyed traps used to catch the animals. She threatened the hunters and the people who helped them. National Geographic magazine published a report about her efforts. Many people who read the story sent money to support the campaign. However, not everyone supported what Fossey was doing. Some people condemned her treatment of the hunters. Rwandan officials opposed her efforts to control an area that she did not own. And some animal experts criticized her strong emotional links with the gorillas. They also questioned her work as a scientist.
Diane Fossey suffered from a number of health problems. As she grew older, she spent less time in the field and more time at her camp doing paperwork. This was partly because she had college students assisting in her research efforts. In 1980, Fossey left Karasoke and accepted a position at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. There, she began to write a book about her years with the mountain gorillas. Her book was published in 1983. It is called Gorillas in the Mist. By then, there were only about 200 mountain gorillas in the world. Diane Fossey made a large number of public appearances to publicize her book and the efforts to save the mountain gorillas. Then she returned to Rwanda. On December 26, 1985, she was found murdered at her camp. A few days later, her body was buried near the remains of some of her gorillas.
Even now, her death remains unsolved. Some people believe that she was killed by someone who opposed her strong attempts to protect the gorillas. 3 years after her death, a major American motion picture based on her book was released. It is also called Gorillas in the Mist. It helped tell her story to millions of people around the world. Diane Fossey kept a written record of her daily activities. She wrote, "When you understand the value of all life, you think less about what is past and think instead about the protection of the future." Diane Fossey loved her work and used her research to help save the gorillas and their environment. Today, the mountain gorilla population is increasing. Some people have said that without her efforts, the animals would no longer exist. The Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund International continues her work.
This program was written by George Groh. Luan Davis was our producer. John Ellison was our studio engineer. I'm Faith Lapidus.
And I'm Steve Ember. Join us again next week for People in America in VOA Special English.